been exploring spiritual receptivity for the last unknown amount of weeks. opinions vary about how long we've been exploring it. And I'd imagine Subhadramati is right rather than me. So we started off with exploring being receptive to what Buddhism calls Vedana. And I always want to keep coming back to this because it's such an important basic sort of starting point. Which is being receptive to the felt quality of your experience. I'm just going to climb into that. She does this every week. Don't be distracted. Oh, you've come out again. So, I thought actually you were going to climb in for a minute. Anyway, let's start again. I was thrown by the seeing you disappear into the cupboard. Have you seen The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? Okay, let's start. Rewind. So let's start again. So yeah, we're starting by mindfulness of Vedana. So that means awareness of the feel of your experience, the taste of your experience. I think this is very important because we sort of don't really have an understanding of this in the West. So everything you think, everything you remember, everything you feel, everything you touch, feels either pleasant or unpleasant, or somewhere in between. So I use the example of a friend of mine who had a real thought that they were a writer, a novelist. But it really was just an idea, but it was an idea he found pleasurable. So he got very attached to that idea, but it was just an idea. It wasn't really a reality, if you mean. And we can live our life in an idea that we find pleasurable, but isn't actually a reality. So another classic one of that is the experience of success. Success is largely an idea. Success is often to do with being successful in the eyes of others. It's a very pleasurable idea that you're going to be successful, but the experience of success is actually much more troubled than that. Often it feels nowhere near as pleasurable as you expect, and the day after the success you don't know what to do with yourself. But you see what I mean, it's quite difficult to let go of because the idea of success, especially in a culture that is so obsessed with success and celebrity and so on, the idea of success is extremely pleasurable. And you really think that if I'm successful, I will then be happy. Actually, when you want to experience success in any area of life, it's much more problematic than that. It creates the possibility of non-success, for instance. So as soon as you're successful in something, you have to keep on becoming more successful in it. Otherwise, the next time, even if you're just the same amount of successful, it feels like less. Do you know what I mean? So it creates the problem of unsuccess, which makes you feel uneasy. I was successful then, but will I be successful next time? Before you know it, that becomes quite addictive. So you have to become more and more successful. Meanwhile, the rest of your life kind of unravels around you, as so many very successful people have found. Yeah? But the idea of success is extremely seductive, isn't it? So we're trying to notice whether we've just got attached to these ideas because they're pleasurable, or are they actually something that actually really creates a deepening of our life. So our thoughts have Vedana. Our thoughts feel pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. Then we were trying to... So that's our first training, is to really start to notice the inner taste of your experience. So if you've suddenly been successful... Yes, but what does the inner taste of that feel like? Sometimes the idea of coming to a class, you might think, oh, well, it's not very pleasurable. I would like rather go and see a film. You know, the idea of coming to the Buddhist Center might not be very pleasurable. Sure it is, but it might not be. But actually, when you're here, very often, you feel deeper for being here. I mean, that's my own experience. Quite often I slightly resist coming down to teach. I know that's a scandal, but I do. And you know, the idea of spending an evening teaching and meditating doesn't feel as pleasurable as going to see a film, for instance. But very often my actual experience here is that my life is deepened by being here. Yeah? But my thought about it might not be particularly pleasant. So first of all, we need to become much more receptive to the actual tenor of our experience rather than what we'd like our experience to be or what even we think our experience is. What is the deeper tenor of our experience? And we need to look for that in the body. Yeah? And we need to train to keep coming back to that as our touchstone of life rather than our ideas about our life or our ideas about the kind of life we should be having, wish we were having, etc. What is the actual experience we're having? Yeah? And that's a taste. It's something you need to feel, especially in the body. Yeah? So we started with that. That's what the first thing we need to become receptive to. And we need to learn, and this is a difficult lesson to learn, not to react to unpleasant feelings, which make them worse, and not to grab onto pleasant feelings, which makes them dissipate. So, you know, if you're on the tube and it's very crowded and hot, it'll be unpleasant. But if you react to that unpleasant vedana by getting irritated, getting into thoughts about you wish you moved somewhere else, start jostling with the crowd and so on, you'll just make the unpleasant experience even more unpleasant. Yeah. Similarly, if you have a pleasant experience and you react to that by wanting more, in the very moment that you're wanting more pleasure, in that very moment you're getting less because your mind is no longer absorbed in the pleasure that you're actually having. Start to imagine future pleasure. So as soon as you're imagining future pleasure, you're no longer enjoying the pleasure you're actually having. Yeah? These are the sort of laws of life that we need to become much more receptive to. That if we react to unpleasant vedana, unpleasant feeling tone in the body, we'll make it worse. If we grasp onto pleasant feeling tone, we'll get rid of the pleasure. So, you know, a glass of wine might be pleasurable, but if we grasp onto that and end up having a bottle, that pleasure becomes displeasure and embarrassment very often. Public embarrassment. Anyway. So that's our first thing. And then we were trying to train in being much more receptive to the world around us, to art, to objects, and to nature. My own feeling as I've got older is that life wants us to appreciate it. That's effectively what we're here for, is just to appreciate life. When I was young, I remember feeling that life was very long. Now I'm just 52. Life seems very, very short. Who knows how long any of us will live, but it goes by very, very quickly. Days, weeks, the hours, they go by so quickly. There's so much beauty around us. It's so easy not to notice it, isn't it? Like, apparently yesterday, or whatever it was, Sunday, yeah, that is yesterday, was the first full day of sun since before Christmas. Mm-hmm. How much of us did we really just appreciate just for itself? Yeah. Or did we just notice it and go back to the stories in our mind, or the laptop, usually in my case? So easy not to quite appreciate life. So much in life that one can feel critical of, irritated by, have theories about, but what about just appreciating it? And to do that, we need to be just open to it. I've been writing just the other day about something Keith said, which he talked about negative capability, which means you just sit there and you just let life come to you. He called it negative capability. It means, and he talked about not reaching out for irritable facts and knowledge. So not trying to stick on life, knowledge, names, labels. Letting all that go, wonderful world, irritable. We've got an irritable searching for certainties, an irritable searching for knowledge, for labels, for fixity. In a world which is never labelled, when you look out of your window, none of the things you're looking at have names attached to them. The birds, the trees, the hills, the clouds. Those names are us. Nothing you look at has a name. But before we know it, we're looking at things in terms of their names. We're just sort of ticking them off in our mind, an irritable reaching out after fact and knowledge and so on. So Keats suggested that we practice this negative capability, that we just let life do itself, and we're just completely open to that. So that was our second area of exploration. Then our third area of exploration, which we've explored for 2 weeks, was being aware of other people, being receptive to other people. I mean, really, this arises very naturally out of the week before, because to be aware of life is primarily to be aware of other people. Most of what we call our life is really other people. In fact, most of what we call ourselves is mostly other people. They think now that 50% of our characteristics are genetic. So half of us is somebody else, right away. You know what I mean? And then our emotional life, almost any emotion you have, from happy to grumpy to ecstatic, is connected with other people. Our life, human life, is unimaginable without other people. So spiritual life, awful word, Dharma life, as I want to call it, has to involve other people. So for the last 2 weeks, we've been exploring that. And even the simple fact of other people's presence means that you have to see a little bit beyond yourself, doesn't it? A while ago, I think last year, I was on retreat with Yon of Archer and Dharavadra, I think. We were on retreat together for two weeks, four of us together in a small hut in Spain. And Yon of Archer and I were our job was to cook the breakfast. And it's very noticeable that when you're cooking the breakfast for four people in a small hut and you're doing it with somebody else, you can't just do it in your mind, because somebody nearly always has to get into the drawer when you're trying to use the hob. You know, someone's always needing to get into that space and things, and you have to sort of realise the reality of other people. You have to stop what you're doing and actually stand back so they can get the rubbish bag out of the thing. Yeah? Sounds very simple, but you see how the reality of others in our lives makes us have to modify ourselves a bit. We have to go beyond ourselves a little bit just to step back and let somebody get the rubbish bag out of the cupboard bit under the sink. You know what I mean? Just that little moment, you have to sort of get out of the stories in our head and remember we're living in a shared world where other people need to get the rubbish bag whilst you're trying to wash up. Yeah. So just the reality of others forces us in a way, in a positive sense, to have to modify our ego sense a little tiny bit, in the sense that we have to need to remember in that moment that other people also exist. Sounds simple, but when we're in a very egoistic state, it's very difficult to remember that other people exist. You know, when you're in a very bad mood or you think that people don't like you, your world closes in around you on that, me on that. It's very, very difficult to remember the reality of others, that you're also actually making their day a bit worse. So when you're in a bad mood, I mean, I'm hardly ever in a bad mood, of course, but let's hypothetically say I was some distant time in the past. You know, when you're in a bad mood, all you're aware of is it's just a difficult day for me. What you don't aware of is how much of that you're vibing out to other people, how much you're sending out keep away from me signals or tiptoe around me signals or whatever, yeah? The more egoistic we are, the less aware we are of living in this shared world. And you see how that shared world is a shared world not just with other people, but with trees and flowers and birds and so on. And we've forgotten that, haven't we? Because we're destroying the world that we share. We don't remember that we're sharing this world. So those are the ways that we've been exploring receptivity so far. Mindfulness of Vedana, particularly of body Vedana, mindfulness of nature, objects and art, mindfulness, receptivity of other people. And what I wanted to say about all of that is that the reason we're doing that is to soften up our egocentricity. From a Buddhist point of view, from the point of view of the image on this shrine, the reason we're doing all of that is not to be a nice person, to be a religious person, to be a good heaven spiritual person, something we should all try not to be, but so that we soften up our egotism. Egotism is a kind of little rubber ball. I think rubber is the right metaphor as well. It's not a hard little thing, because that would break too easily. Do you remember those rubber balls that you could bounce? I remember having them as a child. You could bounce them in the playground, they bounced really high because they were just thick rubber. Egocentricity is like that. It just bounces off everything. It bounces off the natural world, it bounces off other people, it bounces off our work, it bounces back almost into our hand every time. Yeah? So the great task of spiritual life is to soften up this rubber ball of me, this bouncy me rubber ball. You know? Even sometimes when something breaks into that a bit, it closes up very quickly, doesn't it? Just like rubber. So all of our receptivity is to soften up our egotism so that reality can impress itself upon us, so that reality itself can change us. So that's what we're going to be coming on to tonight and next week, is how reality, once we've softened our mind by being receptive to Vedana, receptive to the natural world and art and objects, receptive to other people, perhaps especially other people, with that softened sense of ourselves, reality can start to actually touch us. Before that, really, reality is just an idea, posh-sounding idea called reality. So what I'm suggesting is that what we've been doing is we've been trying to cultivate what I could only call a kind of spiritual softening, a spiritual softening. And one of the things I notice is that this is what I see in people I look up to, this spiritual softening, and this is what I often, I'm afraid, see lacking in people's lives. I want to just explore this a little bit more. See, I don't know, sometimes that I talk anyway. Before we meditate, because I want to just sort of clarify this in my own mind, and hopefully for you as well. So, spiritual softening is really to do with a sort of heart tenderness, but a genuine heart tenderness, not a sentimental one. Very easily mixed up with sentimentality. Genuine spiritual softness is not to do with weakness or lack of strength. I was trying to think of a metaphor. There must be like something like a sail that's soft and movable, but incredibly strong. Softness doesn't imply any kind of weakness. Some people I know are very concerned about weakness and not being weak. It's, I think probably especially for men. Obviously, a concern with weakness is itself a sort of weakness. But that's another matter. What we're wanting is this kind of spiritual softness, a softness of heart, which goes along with a clearness of mind. The two need to develop in tandem, and one is actually, curiously, the flip side of the other. We need to be thinking much more clearly, much more penetratingly, much more brightly, but we need to do that with this softened heart. I'm afraid quite often what I meet is soft people who are soft on the top and hard underneath. I don't know whether you've met this, but people with lots of social... I mean, I don't know how many people, I'm only thinking about two or three. But anyway, let's roll with it for a moment. But I quite often meet people with a social facility, polite, well-mannered, socially adept, sort of even pleasing to be around with, softened on the top. But when you try to explore the deeper issues of their life, you're met with a certain hardness. You know what I mean? It's no more Mr. Nice Guy before we, you know, even scrape the surface. That's what I think I start to notice. A sort of warmth, a softness on top, but an inner hardness. Interesting, I've also met people who are rather hard on the top, but rather soft underneath, in this genuinely spiritual sense. I've got a friend of mine who's really rather difficult to be around, rather sort of abrasive on the top, but when you try and talk to him, even when you sort of criticise him, for instance, you suddenly find this incredible tenderness that he's got, his openness to genuine communication. You suddenly realise he's very, very trustworthy, but his immediate personality is rather rebarbative, and pleasing in a way, but actually when you get to know him better, he's one of the most trustworthy people I know. And to me, I'd much rather that. You know, that's a certain person you can become a friend with, because when the chips are down, I know I can trust him. Slightly difficult to be around, but that's a difficulty. But to see how that's different from this rather soft top to a sort of harder middle. And where the harder middle shows up is when you're challenged, when I'm challenged. When I'm challenged by other people, when I'm challenged by life, by all this rain, for instance, when I'm challenged in difficult circumstances. Do I meet that with a kind of hardness, a no, or do I meet it with an open-heartedness? Actually, to meet the harder aspects of life, the challenges of life, with open-heartedness, that's the real strength. When you see people do that, it's deeply attractive. And again, I've got friends who do this very much and have done this with me. Meet the more difficult things with an open-heartedness, a tenderness of mind, but a clearness of a tenderness of heart, sorry, but a clearness of mind. Sangharakshita recently was saying very often people get this mixed up, so they end up being soft-headed and close-hearted. What we need to be is open-hearted but clear-headed. Yeah? One of the dangers of Buddhists, actually, is to get a bit soft in the head, but strangely hard in the heart, interestingly, when the chips are down sometimes, because soft in the head is often just how you want to be seen. You want to be seen to be open-hearted and kind of Buddhist-y. At least when you're in the centre. But actually, when something challenges you, up comes your sort of inner hardness. Yeah? So this is what I mean by a spiritual softening, a genuine clarification of our mind about the real issues of life, and a genuine open-heartedness, a willingness to move towards the more challenging aspect of life. Because, good heavens, our life is going to challenge us. If not now, it will be to come. Other people will challenge us. Old age will challenge us. Sickness will challenge us. Life is challenging us. It looks like the planet is really in a very dangerous place. We thought that climate change was going to be tomorrow. It seems to be this morning. If that carries on, there's going to be unbelievable challenges to all of our lives. So our great challenge is to soften ourselves spiritually, not in this sort of floppy sense, not in this unthinking, silly, sort of silly sense, which so often masquerades as spirituality, but a genuine open-heartedness with this genuine clear-headedness. Yeah. So what I want to do in our meditation this morning, this morning, I wonder what that says, Freud? Anyway. What I'm going to do with our meditation this evening, I want us to, first of all, we're going to start with some mindfulness of breathing. So I'm just going to ask us to feel the sensations of our breath, the Vedana of our breath, what it feels like, pleasant, unpleasant, just a bit boring. Can we just feel that Vedana, what it feels like, feel it now, try and keep coming back to that. Then the second stage, I want us to see if we can just soften our heart in this spiritual sense. So a simple way of doing that is to gladden your heart. The reason we get hard-hearted is an underlying negativity, really, however much we like to spin that as righteousness or whatever it is. It's an underlying negativity. So the way to change that is to gladden our heart. So all you need to do in the second stage is bring to mind what's good in your life just now. What you like, what you enjoy, what you wouldn't want to change. Yeah? You might not want to change your sense of humour, you don't want to change your living situation, you're enjoying a book you're reading. Especially anything that gives your life a sense of meaning and value. That was good, I liked that, that was valuable. Not just literally pleasant, like a cheesecake or a comedy programme, but what opened your heart, what made you think, that was good, I liked that was good. Not just pleasant, but good. That was valuable. Yeah? So we'll gladden our heart in that way. And just see if you can literally keep coming back to your heart centre when you do that. And it can be anything, a book you're reading. I just saw my lovely little nieces this morning. We were chatting away. and they wanted me to come on holiday with them, and they said it would be funner, which I thought was a wonderful new construction, something that could not only be better, but funner. So, you know, I could just sort of bring to mind Alex saying, well, that'd be much, it would be funner if you came. And that's sort of, I don't know, sort of valuable to me, yeah? Bring to mind my friends and so on. Just open, just see if you can cultivate this opening of the heart just in the moment. And that means you need to keep feeling your heart area, the centre of your chest. And then at the end of that, we'll just do nothing. Just sit in meditation with your eyes closed and just see if you can be open to whatever's in your experience, yeah? Without trying to do anything or without trying not to do anything. If you find that you're all over the place when you try and do that, every time you notice that, you're back, yeah? When you think, oh God, I'm all over the place, as soon as you say, I'm all over the place, you're now back. So just enjoy being back. What does it feel like being back? Then your mind goes off all over the place and you think, oh no, I'm all over the place. I'm back. So just enjoy being back, yeah? As soon as you notice your mind's away, you're back. You don't need to bring yourself back, you don't need to try and come back, you're back. So enjoy being back. Okay?